What's up, Internet? Welcome to the very first episode of Dual Wielding. You'll recognize some unfamiliar voices here. I'm your host, Anthony Gerhardt. With me this week is Chad Fleming and Michael Glebov.
Hey.
All right. So it's the first episode. The way that we'll pretty much run this podcast, we have a pretty particular section. We'll be talking about what we've all been playing, some news that's going on in the week, and we'll have a little section at the end for a little bit of nostalgia, a little retro back in the day. Anyway, I guess we'll start out with what we've been playing this week. I guess we'll kick it off what a lot of people have been playing since it released last Sunday is Super Mario Galaxy 2. Have either of you guys been playing that?
Yes, I actually had a chance to put a couple hours in this last week, and it's good times.
I mean, I'll say that much. I'm about, I guess, 40 or 50 stars in, and it's pretty phenomenal.
Yeah,
I definitely have not played it yet. It's sitting here on my shelf, guilting me right now, hoping to get some time in later this evening, maybe play it. A few hours anyway, but
I don't know why you're just sitting on this podcast at all. If it's sitting on your desk, I'd be jumping into that right now.
Well, maybe you can tell us why I should be jumping into it right now.
Well, you know, when it was first announced at E3 last year, they showed the little trailer, showed the new suits and stuff, and I guess everyone was a little bit concerned with, you know, is this going to be Mario Galaxy 1.5 or is this actually going to be a legitimate sequel? And then, they had the music that played along with the trailer, and it was, you know, MIDI synthesized music, and everyone was kind of about that, and because, you know, Nintendo is known to slack off a little bit. You kind of expected orchestrated music in Twilight Princess and whatever, but we started to see some orchestrated stuff in the trailers leading up to the release, and sure enough, right when the first level came about, boom, orchestrated music right in your face, and it really just set up what the game was going to be like. And I'm sure that you people listening have heard from countless sources that every single level is unique, every level is creative, and it seems like every star has its own little unique gimmick, if you will, that is hardly ever repeated. You never really feel like you're doing the same thing twice, kind of like you felt in, let's say, Super Mario Sunshine. Back in, 2002, every single, it seemed like there were three or four stars in a row where you would just be, you know, spraying a piranha plant. But yeah, this just jumps you right in, and it's not, you can let it hold your hand if you want to, but for the most part, you're free to go, just free to run around, jump around, and I'll just say Yoshi's a lot of fun to play with. Would you say that, Mike?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I was just curious, does it have anything similar to the Super Mario Brothers, new Super Mario Brothers on the Wii, where it has that help system?
Oh yeah, you know, if you just kind of sucked at Mario Brothers Wii, new Super Mario Brothers Wii, it would come up with this little block that you could hit, and that Luigi would go through. So there's two forms of help in that sense, where there will be little signs, little billboards that will show you little tutorial movies on how to play, whether it's just spinning and then kicking an enemy, or long jumping, stuff like that. But also, I haven't come across it yet, but supposedly, if you die enough times, a little form of Rosalina from the first Mario Galaxy will come in, you can talk with her, and it'll be, instead of a super guide, as they had it in the new Super Mario Brothers, this time it's known as Cosmic Guide. And yeah, it'll essentially play through the game for you, and if you let it get to the star, you'll still get the star, it'll still count, but it'll be a bronze star. So anyone that is watching, or at least watching, you will know that you kind of just pussy down on that one.
Okay, that's, I really like that idea.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I've put a couple hours into the game so far, and I love it. I wanted to make sure I got everything I could out of the original, because I think the first time I went through Super Mario Galaxy, I only did the bare minimum. I think it's like 60 stars or something.
Oh yeah.
So I went back to that, put more time into it, and I booted this up this week, and I love it. It's something. It's the rare franchise where I feel like it's like playing games when I was like 12 or something. You know, just
oh yeah.
Just you're not looking for anything other than that pure fun. You know, It's just a blast to play, and whenever I turn it on, I got a smile ear to ear, and holy f- man, it's, I don't know, it's just a lot of fun. Like, I can't lose myself in any other game like I can in that one.
Yeah, for sure.
Maybe it's because it's like, investment is from a 10 to 15 minute basis, you're getting a star constantly, there's never really any setbacks, you can never really lose, you get so many extra lives or whatever, it's just ridiculous, but yeah, I don't know, it's just an absolute pleasure to play, and it's rare to say that about games these days.
It's the kind of thing where, you know, most games, like, for example, Red Dead Redemption has phenomenal presentation, phenomenal storytelling, and yeah, it's a fantastic game, but this, I mean, Mario Galaxy is the kind of thing where storytelling just kind of, you know, here's the basic, whoop, Prince has been kidnapped, and but the presentation's still fantastic, and it's the kind of thing where if you left it alone for 2 or 3 weeks and hadn't played it, and you just booted it up, you could jump right back in without skipping a beat.
Yeah, absolutely.
I guess I guess we'll move on for the moment. Chad, what have you been up to? What have you been playing?
I've been playing a bunch of Record of Agarest War lately. It's a downloadable title for off the PlayStation Network, and I believe it came out on disc on the 360 as well. Either of you guys play any of that at all? Probably not.
I'll be honest, I hadn't even heard of it.
Me either. Do tell.
I'll keep it pretty brief since me and probably 3 other people in North America have played this game. It's a strategy RPG, and it's pretty good. It does a couple of interesting things with the battle system. They're linked together. Like, each character has 2 or 3 squares that glow, and if you put another character on one of those squares, they'll be linked together. And okay. I found it was really useful for keeping my really weak spellcasting units and stuff out of the way of the dudes that would kill them. Because, I mean, my problem with most strategy games is I'm not very strategic. So I would always...
Yeah, pretty big point in those.
Yeah, yeah, it's kind of important. So those characters would often die, and I would usually end up giving up halfway through because I couldn't keep anyone alive. But being able to keep those units out of harm's way made this game a lot more fun. And dude, that game's long.
Oh, yeah?
It's like 90 hours long.
Shit, wow. For a downloadable title?
Yeah. Oh, it's huge.
How much does it cost?
10 gigs.
Yeah, what's the price point?
It's $44.99. It's not a huge break between the I believe the on disc version for the 360 is regular full price.
Really?
Things, yeah, like a mouse pad and pillowcase and really weird stuff. Because it's also
and
got
it's,
this
it's
kind
turn-based?
Of
turn based.
Yeah, it's like standard SRPG.
Okay.
It's got a little like dating sim mixed in with it as well. Like each generation. Yeah, I know, it's weird. It's so weird.
It's so random.
You've got these 3 characters for each generation of the game that you have the ability to hook up with, more or less, and then that will produce a new character who then you play as in the next generation of this game. And it spans 5 generations, and depending on which lady you end up going with, I mean, it'll affect the looks of your character, the stats. I mean, so you can have pretty different experiences each time you play through. I mean, if you want to play through more than once, which is long.
Yeah, but I mean, for sure that sounds like it increases the replay value. That's pretty neat.
Was this developed in Japan by any chance? Or is this?
Yeah, definitely.
Oh, it was?
It doesn't even have English voiceover. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Axis Game Games published it, yeah.
Okay.
I mean, it's got the subtitle, all the text is in English and everything, but all the voice is Japanese.
Sweet deal. I know that you reviewed it on your site. What did you end up giving it?
I gave it a 7.
Okay.
I mean, it's got some cool things in there, and it is pretty fun, but a lot of the menus and the item management and all the crafting is not explained very well at all. And then even once you get the hang of it, the menus are just kind of busted. And when you're in a game that has that many menus and it does not work well, is not a great thing.
Right, right. Good deal. I guess anything else? Mike, what else you been up to?
Most of this week, I have been trying to finish Alan Wake.
Oh yeah, what do you what's your thoughts about that?
I don't know. I'm kind of at ends on it. I don't know really what to think about it. I like a lot of the ideas it has. It does a lot of really cool things, but just in execution, I can't really get into it.
Okay, because it's a narrative-driven title, is that right?
Yes.
And I guess in that sense, that the thing that I relate it to most is Heavy Rain back on the PS3. Yeah. Did you ever get a chance to try that out?
I do have Heavy Rain. I've played a couple hours into it. Haven't finished it yet.
Okay.
But I am familiar with it, yeah.
Yeah, how similar is it? I mean, is it just similar in the fact that it's narrative-driven, or...?
It's... okay, well, in Heavy Rain's case, I guess you could look at it as fully going into the narrative direction. It's entirely that way, and in gameplay is based around the narrative concept.
Right.
Whereas with something like Alan Wake, you still have a very typical third-person action adventure or whatever, with just a heavy focus on narrative, on their story.
Okay.
So I don't know if that made any sense.
Yeah,
but,
that does. I mean, I haven't really looked into Alan Wake. I've been focused on, you know, Galaxy and a little Red Dead and some other stuff, so.
Yeah. And my problem with Alan Wake is that for a narrative-based game, it's not that interesting. I mean, it's a great idea, but for example, for the game, you're collecting the story. You're going through each level and you're finding pieces of his manuscript, I guess. So you'll go along and you'll have to find these little pages of white paper that'll have a piece of extra background exposition or whatever. So you'll come across a piece of paper and the game will stop. It'll come up and he'll just read a wall of text about, I guess it could be anything really. It could be maybe some information about a side character or, and when I don't really like what they do with it. It's very distracting in the game, but there's good instances. For example, when you do find one of these pieces of paper and it'll give you maybe like a heads up for something that's coming or a little bit of extra perspective on a cutscene that you're going to be interacting with in the next little while. But when you do find them, a lot of them aren't in the correct order, so it doesn't really make sense all the time.
Yeah.
It can get a little bit confusing, and it's okay. I'm about 3/4 of the way through, so I'm hoping it gets a little bit better and I can actually understand what's going on, but so far it's basically run to each cutscene and not really have a clue what's happening.
Okay.
And the gameplay isn't good enough to kind of make up for that. Like, it's enjoyable, but it's run and gun, cutscene, repeat, basically.
Gotcha. Oh, yeah, I'm hoping to be able to pick it up and play it a little later down the road, but a little busy, I guess, to say the least at the moment, but... I guess the last thing I'll try and pimp out a little bit is a couple days ago I downloaded Gaijin's latest installment in their BitTrip series, because they've had BitTrip Beat, BitTrip Core, what was that, BitTrip Void, and finally they came out with BitTrip Runner. And each of them, if you guys are unfamiliar with it, has to deal with essentially making or helping to make music. They've made fantastic soundtracks. I guess, do you guys know the name of it? I guess that genre of music? Chiptunes, that's right, chiptunes.
Yeah.
So, I guess in the first one, it was Pong-inspired. You had the Wiimote. This is all available on the Nintendo's WiiWare. The first one was Pong-inspired. You held the Wiimote on its side, and you tilted it up and down to control, essentially, the Pong paddle. And you would repel back little blips, and as you would do that, those would be, I guess, the melody. So then we had BitTrip Core, which was, you still held the Wiimote on its side, and it was, I guess, a little bit like Guitar Hero, but basically you held the D-pad in one of the directions that the bits were traveling to cross. It's tough to explain without a picture or video. But yeah, essentially it's still, messing around with bips and bleeps. And BitTrip Void was very reminiscent of Ikaruga in the sense that you tried to capture blips with this used the nunchuck, and you would fly around and capture little blips while trying to avoid certain other ones, and the more you captured blips, the larger your little circle grew, and then It would essentially be like the weakest link where you could try and get it as big as you could and you'd get more points and then you'd bank it. But if you got hit, you would lose the points. So the newest one that came out, I believe, two Mondays ago is BitTrip Runner. And that is actually a platformer based with music, and it's, I'll just tell you right now, it's pretty damn hard. It gets to the point where you want to throw a controller, but at the same time, it's just really addicting. It uses a mix between jumping over stuff, sliding under stuff, propelling yourself with a trampoline by pushing up, and a mix of a few others, but it's definitely worth a look at. The whole series is. The music's great, and it's addictive stuff, and all of it's really hard. So if you're looking for a trip back to the old Nintendo hard stuff back in the NES, it's definitely worth a look. So there's my little spiel on that, and Chad's been playing Super Street Fighter 4, and tell us a little about that.
Okay, well, imagine Street Fighter, and now imagine more of that.
And that's fair.
Pretty much Super Street Fighter 4. I mean... There's a few balance changes that happened. There's every character now has a second ultra instead of just the one. And there's 10 new characters in addition to the characters from regular Street Fighter 4. And there's new stages thrown in.
Oh, are they all characters from previous Street Fighter games? Or is it like new characters?
A little bit of both. There's, you've got Cammy, there's Dudley. You've got some old returning favorites, but then there's also a couple of characters like Juri, who is kind of like Chun-Li, I guess, a little bit. She fights with her legs as well. She's a kick character. And nice. She's entirely new.
Just as a side note, my God, I mean, I never get tired of saying it, how freaking enormous Chun-Li's legs are. It's insane.
Oh, it's ridiculous. It's
fantastic.
Yeah.
They've almost become parodies of themselves, I think.
Seriously, I mean, that might be a developer joke, I don't know. But I guess the other thing that I'm certainly glad to see back is the Destroy Car mode in Street Fighter. That's good classic stuff from way back when.
Oh yeah, that's definitely a fun time. It's great because the car just stands there and lets you beat it up, so you get some kind of feeling of accomplishment out of this game anyway.
There's no losing, there's no getting your ass kicked.
Yep, this seems to be continuing this week's theme of me playing games I really have no business playing, because try and take that online, I get wrecked pretty consistently.
I'm sure there are cars from different countries online that you can play against.
Oh, if only. That'd be great. But I'll probably persist. That will be a pretty constant game in my rotation, I think.
Good deal.
From here on out.
All right, I guess moving on to news. First thing we'll talk about, since E3 is rolling around, and this is sure to be a pretty big point in it, Natal. Microsoft's Project Natal might not be Natal as we know it. Might see a name change, and rumors have it from, I believe it was Edge.com, that has a trustworthy source that says Natal, or as they have become to know it, Wave, is going to be retailing for around $150 alone. Or if you want to buy the Xbox, you can buy a combination pack of this Wave / Natal. I'm just going to refer to it as Natal for right now. But you can get the combo of an Xbox Arcade and Natal for $300, which, from what I understand, is a little more expensive than what people thought it was going to be.
Thought it was originally not going to be over 100.
Yeah, that's what I the buzz that I heard about. It was going to be under $100.
Yeah, there were preliminary reports out there saying it was going to be like 50, even, so.
I mean, I'd be surprised if it was 50 because, technology like that, it's certainly, I mean, I think they'd be losing money on that, but if they made it 50, it would be, it'd be something that nobody would miss. 100 is, yeah. People would be willing to invest if they saw potential in software, but with 150, I think that might be as steep as, the $599 US dollar PS3 that they announced back in 2006.
Yeah. Well, in Canada, you can get a 360 now for like $130 sometimes.
Really? Like an arcade unit, or and this is a just a packaged factory seal?
Yeah, arcade unit. Then again, I don't know. Everyone seems to think it's because they might be introducing a new, like I guess a slimmer version or whatever. But right now you can get them really cheap. So I don't know. Just it sounds odd that at $150 it.
And then I mean, as the
I guess it will be worth.
Yeah.
Oh, go on.
As the consumer, I mean, you're going to have to realize options. But for one thing, that market's already been tapped into and pretty flushed out as far as the people that have, you know, been interested in motion control. I guess this is more of a hill that Sony's going to have to climb because it's very similar to the Wii Remote. But the people that were interested in it bought the Wii and, you know, got Wii Sports and haven't really done much else with it. They got Wii Sports, maybe Wii Fit, maybe Wii Sports Resort. So, I mean, it's kind of the market's already been tapped into, and Microsoft maybe has a little more incentive to get it because it eliminates the controller altogether. You're actually literally getting up and moving around, and every movement is transcribed to the TV. So they might have that going for them, but as far as the casual gamer, the soccer mom, you know, person that sees it off the street, naturally probably does not have an Xbox 360, and you know. Arcade units probably for them, but that's shelling out another $300 for, you know, video game equipment when you have the Wii sitting at home and you're probably satisfied with Wii Sports and whatever other shovelware that you probably ended up buying.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I think you're right. It's a matter of convincing the people who were not necessarily into the, well, they bought into the Wii or whatever, but like you said, are more inclined to something like the Xbox 360 and have games, I guess, that are more directed towards that more mature taste. So I don't know. I'm really looking forward to seeing what they, and hopefully they announce, will be releasing with it when it does happen to come out.
Oh yeah, that's key.
I think that's gonna have a huge effect on how well this thing takes off.
For sure. I mean, the people that have the 360 are gonna be, you know, the prime. It's gonna get it going. And that's one thing that I'm skeptical about is because, you know, when they showed Milo back last E3, everyone's like, oh my goodness, it's fantastic technology, but in a practical use, what's going to happen there? Like, what are people going to use this for? When you have the best games that are selling on Xbox, you know, Call of Duty, Halo, how is that going to be used? Your hands are going to be attached to the controller and, you know, in front of your waist. Is it going to use, you know, voice to control some stuff? I mean, you won't be up and around moving. They're going to be two distinct different types of games, whether, you know, it's Tiger Woods or it's, you know, another platformer. It's going to, Wii and PlayStation's Move, there are going to be hybrids. Galaxy uses the pointer and shaking to help control the game, but also uses the buttons. But as far as Xbox and Natal goes, you're either going to have, you know, a gamepad or you're going to have nothing. You're going to have Natal. There's not really a hybrid option, I don't think.
Yeah.
Unless, of course,
yeah,
go on.
Oh, I'm just curious in regards to how Microsoft will be handling a lot of their already established franchises, whether they'll be integrating this or wanting to integrate this into something like, I don't know, like Halo or, you know?
Yeah, I mean, and we also keep in mind that Bungie's done with Halo after Reach, so. I mean, the Halo franchise, I believe, is still Microsoft, so I'm sure we'll see some spin-offs because Halo's a cash cow. I mean, let's be honest.
Oh, yeah, the smartest thing they could do is to package Natal, or not package it, but in order to sell Natal, have this Halo game. I mean, it doesn't even have to, it could be an offshoot like Halo Wars or something, but just something with the Halo name on it that says, yep, this is going to use Natal, so if you want to play this game, you're going to need Natal. And I think that's probably going to be one of the best ways to get it out there.
Yeah, I mean, that's
Halo
absolutely
crossbow
right.
Training?
Not quite. But, I mean, Chad's right. You can't just half-ass your way, you know, into this. If you want to make a splash, you have to support it with some good, you know, good quality titles. The hardcore will come to say, I need to get Natal for this.
Yeah.
It's kind of like what Nintendo didn't do with Motion Plus. I mean, you could argue they did it with Wii Sports Resort, sure. But I mean, other than that, what else have we gotten that's a high-profile title that uses Motion Plus exclusively?
Exactly.
Like Red Steel?
I played through Red Steel 2, and, you know, it was a lot of fun to begin with, but that game is, I think, proof that, you know, the combat, it was just a lot of fun. But, you know, sometimes when you come home from work, you come home from school, that's not exactly what you want to do. But, you know, when you do sit down with it, yeah, the combat's fun. But at least in my opinion, what I found was that you just went from room to room, just killing enemies, turning on a switch, going back, and doing the same thing over and again. The level design wasn't really quite there with Red Steel 2, and the more that we see, you know, these great uses, these precise and accurate motion trackers, the novelty is going to wear off. And Red Steel 2 is, you know, it's better than the first, I would think, but it's not something you'd buy the Wii for. And I'm still want to go on record saying that Tiger Woods is the best use of Motion Plus that we've seen. But yeah, you're right. They haven't. I mean, Zelda's supposedly going to use Motion Plus, and we'll see how that works. And it's supposedly going to be you have to have Motion Plus or you can't play it. But it's been a year, and there hasn't been much support for it. So,
well, I'm curious. How do you guys feel about the rumored name change? I mean, do you think that's even something they can pull off at this point? I mean, I kind of feel like if you go on national television calling your product one thing,
are you talking about Natal?
Change the name of it. Yeah.
Okay. I mean, at this point, it's been a year. I think it's a mistake. I mean, supposedly Nintendo's DS was a code name, and then, you know, the name caught on, and they went ahead with it, and it worked out fine. So if it was going to be called Wave, that's literally just coming in right after Wii, coming in right after Move. It's an average name, I mean, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
Natal is something that stands out, and it's something that you won't. I mean, when you're talking about Natal, boom, that's in your head. You're talking about Wave. What, there's Google Wave, there's beach surfing waves, and they need to stick with Natal.
That's just it. Like Wave, while it fits in with what they're going for, I think it sticks in too well with the others and doesn't give it enough flavor to stand out, especially with what they're trying to do with it, because Natal seems different enough.
Didn't they have a philosophy behind Natal? Like, the name itself?
That's what I was wondering. I can't think of if that actually means anything. Or, like, just that's not like an actual word, is it?
I think it's a word Go on.
It's kind of reminiscent of, I forget what language it is, but birth in some languages, Natal, I know. Or something like that.
Sweet.
That sounds right.
And, I'm into it.
It says, yeah, the word Natal means of or relating to birth. It's the birth of the next generation of home entertainment. Perfect. Stick with
it. See, that fits. That means something. Everyone knows what it means and what it represents. Keep it.
But if they change it to Wave, it'd be, I mean, I don't think anyone would be lighting up the pitch, you know, the torches and pitchforks, but... Anyway, I guess other news moving on. Rock Band 3 was a tease this week when they demo for Rock Band Green Day came out. Yeah. And lo and behold, we have a keyboard symbol, which I think I found another quote somewhere that it might be a keytar.
Really?
Yeah.
Like, would that be like a fully functioning keytar or like a keytar with four keys and different colored? I don't know.
You know, as far as Rock Band goes, I doubt it'd be a fully functional keytar, because that'd be pretty badass, and it'd probably be more expensive than what peripherals would go for. So I'm sure it'll be a Rock Band keytar. But that said, I've heard that there's going to be like a professional mode in this Rock Band 3 where you'd actually have to have some guitar experience to work the instruments. But we'll see where that goes from there. But just, I guess, on the focus of, music genres, music games, do you guys think that the band series is kind of run its course?
Yes. When you're coming out with Rock Band Green Day, I think you're kind of stretching what you're going for there. I get, like, if you can get, like, a historical band like that, that's cool. Like, whatever, what is it, Def Leppard or... I don't know. I don't keep up with
Metallica's Guitar Hero is pretty badass. I'll say that.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I'm totally into that. But when you're doing it for the sake of, okay, who's popular right now? Who has enough songs that we can make a, somewhat familiar track list? I don't know. It just seems like a cash grab.
I mean, yeah, there's always going to be cash grabs. There's going to be Aerosmith and, you know, what have you. But just as far as, like, the genre itself, I mean, I guess the music genre could technically be said we started, in a sense, with DDR. And, you know, those games are occasionally still being made, at least, you know, in the past few years. And it's just kind of died out because I guess people got tired of it. There wasn't enough, you know, evolution in the genre. And then they moved on to the Guitar Hero games, Rock Band games, and... Rock Band 3 is, I mean, and whatever, Guitar Hero 6, which is, I think the name there is Warriors of Rock or something. It's, they can't do much more, honestly. And, yeah. Warriors of Rock, I don't, whatever. But...
Terrible name.
I mean, the changes that need to happen there is, I mean, people have been talking about it. What I think would be a fine end-all of the game is you buy Rock Band 3 and you get... what, a choice of, you know, 10 songs that come with it, and with the game comes, what, $40-$50 of credit, and then there's this vast library of songs that you get to choose what you want to put on there, and the library keeps increasing over time, and it's essentially the iTunes of, you know, of Rock Band. They're kind of doing that now, but this would be completely your Rock Band as far as, you know, you could go over to someone's house and they would have completely different songs, but That's just my thoughts on it. They can't just keep releasing music games with a new set list and
True. Oh no, I completely agree, but you also have to wonder how many of that user base has their Xboxes or PS3s set up to the internet.
That's true. It's you know, something you didn't think about. But
so it's just getting to the point where, you know, I don't know, it's like how many times can they do this without people just getting tired of it? Like, okay, you have Green Day, I don't know, Fall Out Boy, Rock Band, Green Day, Fall Out Boy. But, you know, like, it's just, like, people are going to eventually just want to, like you said, play what they want to play.
Yeah, and I'm fine with stuff in the past. I think, is Guitar Hero 3 still the highest-selling Guitar Hero, or the band game?
Yeah.
I guess what I'm saying is that sales will start to reflect, you know, people's interest in the genre, and I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, it just starts dwindling.
Well, I'd say we probably already saw that with the Beatles Rock Band. I mean, they expected that game to sell like crazy. And
I mean, if not, just running from the Beatles name alone.
Yeah, like imagine what that licensing must have cost Harmonix.
I guess moving on, unless we got anything else to say there.
I'm good.
Okay.
I got enough.
New Sonic, Sonic Colors. For Wii and DS, we decided to delay Sonic 4, which could be, you know, a step back to the old Sonic days of old, and let's bring a spiritual successor to the Sonic games on Wii. Oh my god. Supposedly, the DS version is being made by Demps, which is responsible for the DS Sonic Rush and the Sonic Rush sequel. And Demps is also responsible for Sonic 4 coming, you know, downloadable by the end of 2010. And the Sonic Rush games, from what I understand, were they were quality games. They were good Sonic games, and so that's another reason to be, you know, optimistic about this Sonic 4 coming out. But here's another 3D Sonic that they're trying. I don't know if they're trying to tide us over. Do we even have a tentative release date? Is it just?
I thought it was leaked or something, and then in response to that, they came out with a quick trailer.
Oh,
yeah, that could be possible.
Okay. But yeah, the trailers.
It's supposed to be.
Go on. There's no gameplay in the trailer. It's just a quick teaser of Sonic running through and some little colorful friends, and then they spell out his name and like little firefly lights. I mean, there's nothing to it. You have no idea what it's going to be.
Yeah. Well, I thought I read something about it being kind of like their response to Galaxy. Like it's, I don't know. It takes place in a theme park or something.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, it has to do with Sky, but. Trying to take on Galaxy is quite the... maybe they're just trying to be similar as far as, you know, that's... Oh, we just finished playing Galaxy. Here's another game in space, blah, blah, blah. Maybe that's what they're going for, but, yeah, I do remember them talking about that, but
let's see. I'm interested in it.
It's... Sonic kind of died for. I did like the Sonic Adventure game, Sonic, particularly Sonic Adventure 2.
Me too.
A lot of people did. But yeah,
I played a lot of that game.
I loved that. It was good stuff. And then, did any of you play like Sonic the Hedgehog, just the reboot, around when Xbox 360 was launched, and I guess PS3 too?
Yes.
I think I rented it.
What did you guys think?
It was bad. It was pretty rough.
Yeah, I mean, that, from what I understand, that was the general consensus. And then the Wii came out with Sonic and the Secret Rings, and for some reason, they decided to. I mean, they had some things right. Like it was cool, kind of, you know, having Sonic run on his own, and then you just focused on moving left and right and dodging and just maintaining his speed. But they had you control that by tilting the Wii remote, which is just kind of, in my opinion, clunky and awkward. And then they moved on to the multi-console. What was the one with the werewolf, the werehog? Sonic Unleashed. And they had, like, the daytime levels supposedly were really, really cool. But the werehog just kind of slowed it down and just made it into a brawler, which wasn't that fun. But, yeah, they went in the right direction with the daytime levels, which was a mix between, you know, the 3D behind Sonic perspective and the side-scrolling classic perspective, and they did a good job there. And then they moved on to what, Sonic and the Black Knight on Wii, which was a god-awful, abhorrent piece of shit. I'll say that.
Oh man.
Like, there is no looped, like, no loops or corkscrews in sight whatsoever. And
little vitriol there? Jeez.
You moved, I guess, left and right a little bit, but you were constantly stopped by just enemies in your path. Waggle, 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 shake the remote, kill them, move on, enemies stop you, waggle. It's a wrist workout.
And well, I don't know if you know this, but everyone has wanted Sonic to have a sword for as long as Sonic's been around, so yeah, just, clearly you're in the minority here.
Just as much as everyone wanted Shadow to have a gun.
Most people didn't want Shadow to be existing in the first place, so...
But
I cannot believe.
Go on.
You look at Sonic right now, and it's like, I don't know, watching a TV sitcom. It's like a freak of the week theme for every single episode. It's like, okay, well, we're gonna put Sonic in this awesome fucking situation. He's gonna have a sword, or he's gonna be like fighting dragons and shit. And I don't know, like
there's Sonic fighting his dragons.
Oh, yeah,
no,
and
well,
then,
you know
okay,
what's gonna suck.
Cool.
Yeah.
Some snakes. But it's, I don't know, it's like he's like a testing ground now for all these like stupid fucking ideas they get. Finally, they've just realized this, okay, nobody wants this. They want it like it used to be.
Yeah, hopefully they learned the lesson from Sonic and the Black Knight, because, I mean, I'm led to believe, since this isn't a 360 or PS3 title, that this is a spiritual successor in this storybook series that they had with Sonic and the Secret Rings and the Black Knight. So, I mean, the first one, Secret Rings, is all right, so hopefully they choose to, you know, follow that one more than Black Knight. But, God, I'll just say that I'm looking forward to Sonic 4 than
Well, don't be surprised when a year from now we'll be discussing Sonic again, and we'll be noting how Sonic and Colors and all his little friends completely destroyed Sonic 4 in sales, and then Sega's going to hold that up as saying, see, people want Sonic and his friends. It's not this side-scrolly garbage.
Yeah.
And then they're just going to make Sonic Unleashed 2, and we're going to cry.
You're probably right. It's sad but true.
Sonic Werehog is starring in his own game. My God.
With guns.
With guns, no less. Shadow's making a little guest appearance.
I'm not gonna lie, I played Shadow the Hedgehog to completion, but...
I'm sorry. It's a... oh my God. I can't say that I ever did that. That's incredible. Moving on, we have Pokemon. Would you guys believe that Pokemon is still selling? People still buy that.
No way.
I'm still buying it.
Pokemon I bought Soul Silver. Pokemon is Black and White is coming out in Japan this year, but it's coming to America in 2011. So
I'll probably buy that one too.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Well, this one looks a little different from the previous ones, at least. I mean, it looks like there's something new here.
Taking a 3D perspective in a sense. I mean, they're actually, you know, people that looked into the Pokemon Soul Silver and Heart Gold were able to do it just by messing with it internally to make it look just like Black and White. And basically, if you don't know about it, listeners, Black and White is taking a 3D perspective, while the previous Pokemon games on DS have, you know, taken it to where when you walk past the building, it still looks like you're walking past it, the perspective changes, but now it's literally the building is going to be straight in front of you, like straight up on the screen. It's essentially a 3D adventure, but they've just kind of messed around with the engine. So it's still the same engine, but they've just changed the perspective, so... There's the thing that's kind of disappointing about it is that, yeah, Soul Silver and Heart Gold came out this past spring, and with the announcement of their 3DS, you would think that, you know, the smart company is that we're taking another risk by having this handheld that is, you know, going to have 3D without glasses. A lot of people like 3D, a lot of people don't. But, you know, regardless if you like 3D or not, what would sell the system is to either bundle or launch a new Pokemon game with the system. It's a no-brainer.
Yeah.
So, but they're releasing it for the DSi, and, well, I mean, there's more Pokemon. When do you think that, when do you think Pokemon's gonna start to tire out?
I don't know if it ever will. They seem to be, I don't know, progressing it at least.
Yeah.
For once. So.
I mean, what's still yet to be seen is you wonder when they're going to do it, and hopefully when Nintendo will, you know, get a little more relaxed on their online fear, it's a Pokemon MMO.
Yes. Man, that...
Yep.
About
please.
A freaking time. We've been... I know people have been talking about it for 10 years.
Yeah. And it's true. It would sell like hotcakes. Like, I would willingly give up all of my free time to have a Pokemon MMO. I'll admit it. I'm 20 years old, and I'm sure there's a lot of other people who would do the same.
You put a monthly fee on it, and Nintendo already prints money for a living, but now you do that, and, I mean, it's a no-brainer. Now, understand that a lot of Pokemon's audience is, you know, tweens and younger kids, and... I mean, that is obviously, I think, why Nintendo's kind of hesitant on it, but it's such a cash cow.
Yeah. Well, maybe they're keeping it as their ace up the sleeve, you know? If we really need to, we got this, guys. We're sitting on it. But,
well, you asked earlier, yep. Never mind, continue.
No, go on.
Well, you're just saying, when do you think people are going to get tired of it? But I think... Pokemon's kind of in that unique space where, I mean, people in a very broad range of ages plays it. And by the time people like us start to get old and jaded about all the same levels and the same basic process over and over again, you've got all these new younger kids who have not even played Pokemon before, and they're the ones who are kind of continuing to purchase it, so... I don't know that we'll ever see it really die off.
Well, yeah, for sure. I mean, Mario's never going to die off. Zelda's going to die off. Pokemon's never going to die off. You start to wonder, you know, what direction are they going to take the series? Because, you know, getting with your starter Pokemon and then, you know, catching as many as you can and then beating all the gym leaders, you wonder when that series is going to tire, at least for, you know, critical acclaim. You wonder if they're going to, you know, have an engaging storyline. If they're going to advance it like that. Because, let's be honest, Team Rocket, has anyone ever been considered them a viable threat whatsoever?
Well,
no.
Go on.
Yeah, I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see what else they do with this upcoming Black and White, because, like, I think it looks pretty good so far. Like, I like what they're doing with the 3D. But like you said, it would have been great if they could have gone further with it, with the 3DS. But at least it's something. And I don't know. I hope that's not all they really have planned for it. Because it seems like the DS is the only way they're really handling it right now. Because I don't think they have any like Wii Pokemon games announced, do they?
Nothing good. You know, nothing but spin-offs. There's no true RPG or anything. And the console RPGs have always been pretty lackluster to begin with.
Yeah. But, I don't know. It'll be interesting to see what they come out with. Hopefully this isn't just it. Because like you said, they're actually doing something different with it now. So hopefully it's not restricted to perspective change, kind of.
For sure, for sure. But you know, it wouldn't be the first time Nintendo's done something like that. You know, when they consider efforts like Animal Crossing for Wii, hardly changed anything whatsoever.
Yeah,
it's. I mean, even New Super Mario Bros. Wii, people like the game, but they could have done so much more with the presentation for it. They recycled so much from music to art style to everything. I mean, sure, a lot of fun, but yeah, they could have done more.
Yeah, well, hopefully. I'm really interested in seeing what they, if they do announce anything at E3, so.
Yeah, I mean, you can be sure that we'll see something on that.
Yeah.
I guess on that note also, Nintendo has another chance for a phenomenal launch title. You know, we haven't seen Mario Kart, was it DS in 2004?
True.
No, that was DS in 2004, so I guess Mario Kart was 05. And so it's been 5 years, and, you know, I guess, when was the Wii one? Was Wii 2007?
I think so.
It was maybe a while
because
ago.
His Brawl was 2008, so Mario Kart Wii was 2007, and, Perfect launch title. I mean, no brainer. Yeah. Mario Kart for 3DS. I can see, you know, interesting concepts being done just as far as perspective for a 3D Mario Kart. And, you know, launch it with an online thing. People will buy the system.
I'd personally really like to see it. That'd get me to buy it. And I'm sure, like you said, a lot of people know the franchise and they need something like that to get at least some sort of hook.
Yeah, like what we were talking with Motion Plus and Natal earlier, it's the exact same thing here.
Yeah. What other news do we got?
I don't know, what happened? Oh, the EA Insomniac, EA Partners deal.
That's right.
All right.
Insomniac is the developers of the games like,
Resistance, Ratchet and Clank, I think? Is that accurate?
Yeah, Ratchet and Clank is one of them too. But yeah, so, you know, some notable PS3 exclusives, and I'd have to read into the story again, but from what I understand, you know, they're going to be, since they're with EA, they're going to be multi-console, but I'm pretty sure that the exclusives will, you know, keep their way on the PS3. I don't think that it'll be making its ports or anything, will be making their way to the 360 by any means.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, Sony still owns the rights to Resistance and Ratchet, so those will be staying on the PlayStation 3.
That's right. And, you know, it's interesting. You know, some people were just pissed at EA for doing that. But you wonder, who would you guys say is the more evil company, if you will, between Activision and EA?
Man, Activision.
Oh, definitely Activision.
Yeah.
EA used to be like that, but ever since Riccatello got in there, they've been kind of improving in the eye of the public, at least.
Yeah, and I mean, they're trying new stuff, like with Mirror's Edge, and I'm a fan of EA. One thing I'm still not a fan of is, you know, getting the rights to the entire NFL and stopping 2K games from making their NFL 2K series. But that might change sometime soon, too, because I read something about how there is a Supreme Court decision that made it to where each NFL team is its own entity instead of just under the NFL, so that might be changing sometime soon.
So would that mean, like, you could have half of the NFL with EA and then half of the NFL with...
I doubt it. Surely if you did a lot more, you know, negotiation with every single team, you could do something like that, but honestly, I don't think that'd be worth the effort. That'd be a little difficult, but...
Could lead up to a sweet crossover game, though.
I was a fan of the 2K games.
Yeah, they're. When did those stop exactly? What?
I know there's 2K3. Was the one that I got, but let's see. Was there? I mean, I think there's 2K4, but I'm not sure if there's 2K5.
2004 was the last one. NFL 2K5, but it came out in 2004.
Right. Okay. So NFL 2K5. Okay. And then they got kind of cock-blocked from the industry for a good 10 years.
Well, yeah, here's hoping that something comes of it, at least. It would be great to see some sort of competition between the two franchises again.
Yeah.
Hopefully push for a little bit more innovation or whatever, but...
I mean, at the very least, bring some new ideas to the table, because EA still tries with their games, I know that much. They still try and make every experience better, but... when you know you have the same group of people doing stuff, you get some new brains on the table and you get new ideas. So,
Yeah, well, absolutely. It was the competition between Red Octane and Harmonix that spawned Rock Band. I mean, before that, we were just playing music games with a guitar.
Exactly.
But because of competition, now we have keytars and whatever else.
The keytar. That's going to be so freaking awesome. And here's the essentially the nostalgia section of each podcast we're going to talk about. Today, we're going to talk about the first console experience for each of us because, you know, it helped us get to where we are today. I guess we'll start with Chad. What's how did you get your start?
I was a Genesis kid way, way, way back in the day. I loved the heck out of my Sega Genesis.
I'm assuming...
And I think... I think the first game I got for that was Sonic 2, which honestly is still to this day one of my favorite games. Probably my favorite Sonic game in the series. Like, that was kind of the pinnacle for me.
Yeah, I mean, that's, I think everyone, you know, Sonic 2 is a favorite for everyone. And what was the place with the, like, the nightmare fuel water? You guys know what I'm talking about? There's a section of the level, it was like the second world. And there's a part where you're running through, all of a sudden you're underwater, and it was so difficult to get up top, and the nightmare music is what I'll call it. You guys know what I'm talking about? And then he looks at you, and like he like runs out of air, and I had nightmares, I'll say that much.
It's incredibly traumatic.
Yeah, but
for a kid's game about a little hedgehog?
Yeah.
And he stares right into your eyes as he dies, too. He's like, this is your
son of a bitch.
You did this to me.
But yeah, Sonic 2 is so good. Did you guys use the two-player mode a lot? I know that when I went to bosses, I'd have someone else grab the controller and, you know, just mess with the Tails. Tails never dies, so Sonic just stay in safety.
I would have friends over, but, like, honestly, my experience with Sonic for Sega, like Sonic 2 and Sonic the Hedgehog, was the complete opposite. I fucking sucked at that game. I don't know why. I was terrible. And I had it. I would always play it. But I could never get past whatever point, maybe the first couple levels. Mm-hmm. So it just pissed me off to the point where I just gave up on 2D Sonic. But I play with friends.
Yeah, that's the one thing about the Sonic games is that it encourages you to run so fast, but all of a sudden, nope, there's a wall of spikes, or nope, there's an enemy. Yeah. So, I mean, playing through it a lot, you get used to the level, and then it's really fun to, you know, dodge everything at high speed, but the first time through, you're gonna get hit.
Yeah, and I don't know, I was just terrible at stuff when I was a kid, so it was not a good mix for me. But yeah, two-player, I'd play that all the time. That's the only time I could actually progress somewhat through that game, and it was fun, Like, that's the reason I got a console in the first place, was for multiplayer. Like, to have friends over and be like, okay, guys, let's do this, because I sure as hell can't do it on my own, so.
So, Chad, what else did you have? You had the Sonic games, what else?
I played... Well, this was actually maybe my favorite era of gaming, just because that was before I knew anything about the industry, before I would read reviews or magazines or any of that. So I would just end up with some pretty crazy titles, like Green Dog, the Beached Surfer Dude. Which is, it's essentially, he crashes on a beach and gets this amulet stuck around his neck, and then because of it, he can't surf anymore. He's physically restricted from surfing. So he just has to go through all these different platforming levels to get this amulet off so he can surf again.
Why don't we have shit like that anymore? Where is that stuff?
I don't know, dude. Hey, Suda51 could have something like that in the works. Like, that guy's got all my hopes resting on him.
Oh, Suda's a pretty...
New EA Suda game.
Yeah, with Genesis, I had, you know, I had all the movie tie-ins. I had X-Men. X-Men was fun. I had Captain America and the Avengers. I guess I had, like, those arcade-style, like, brawlers, because I had Sunset Riders, Captain America, Spider-Man, all that business.
Those were a lot of fun.
They were, and they still are. I mean, they age well.
Yeah. And certainly. And they, man, I just, yeah, they were a ton of fun to play, and they were, yeah, generally good games, like good brawlers, like you said, and couldn't get enough of them, man.
Did you guys play Sonic Spinball?
Yes. Was that the pinball game?
I did play Sonic Spinball.
What do you think? You know, I guess I was just, you know, a traumatized kid or whatever, but that game, I don't know, just the color scheme or what, it was kind of creepy.
It was, especially that first level. It's like an acid factory.
Yeah, it's an acid factory, and, you know, occasionally the little bucket wouldn't be there for you to, you know, to fall into when you're trying to get one of the emeralds, and, yeah, it was just kind of creepy. And
it was really creepy. I don't think I ever got past that level either. For that reason.
Yeah, pinball adds that, you know, that element of chance where sometimes you just kind of get screwed and you fall into the acid and there's nothing you can do about it. But it was kind of a dark game.
It was, and I got it recently. I started playing it again for, I guess they came out with that Sega Genesis or Mega Drive collection or whatever
Sonic,
for 360.
Yeah, Sonic Ultimate Collection or something.
Yeah, and I played it again and it was the exact same thing. Like, I just could not get into it. That first level was just so unappealing.
Yeah.
Like, I want that hook, and it's not easy.
It was a tough game, for sure.
As most games were.
Yeah, back in the day.
Era.
Because games are shorter. They gotta, you know, you gotta explain the replay value somehow. Make it hard as hell.
Yeah.
But, I guess, Mike, do you wanna give your, how did you start?
Sure, I also started with the, Mega Drive, but I, like, pretty similar experiences to yours. What I put most of my time into, though, was the Game Boy, the original Game Boy.
Yeah.
I have always been more more handheld inclined, especially when I was a little kid. And I just played the shit out of that thing.
Now was it Pokemon
like, whether
it was,
you
or?
Yes.
Okay.
That was actually probably my first, I don't know, the first game I actually like invested myself into. Like I must have put, man, I don't even know. I played that game like full replays must have been like 10 or 15 times
Whatever
came out, the color, and I just loved it. It hooked me, and there's a ton of good games for that. Like whether it was
I mean everyone came Metroid. Bundled with Tetris, and that's
yeah. Well, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
That's essentially what you know won it over from like the Game Gear and whatever other competitor was Tetris. Everyone loved Tetris.
Yeah.
I was a fan of the Golden Mario Land 2 Golden Coins. Did you guys do that one?
I had that one, yep. Yeah. It's good times.
I did not.
Link's Awakening is still one of the best Zelda games, I would think.
Okay, Link's Awakening was for Game Boy,
right?
That's right.
I like Link's Awakening more than either of the two DS Zelda stuff.
Agreed.
Definitely yeah, I'm not a big fan of the stylus controls.
Not at all. I mean, at least get the option for D-pad controls.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because there are some things like, you know, throwing the boomerang and, you know, drawing the path. That's a cool little gimmick. It's, you know, cool for puzzles, but please, just D-pad control. At first I thought I was getting used to it, but then I went back to like Minish Cap on Game Boy Advance and it was like eating pie.
How was Minish Cap? I never picked that
up. I played through it once, but it was, you know, it was enjoyable. It was a good Zelda title. Good puzzles. It was kind of short, but it was a good adventure. Like, I mean, it's probably cheap somewhere now, and it's worth putting your time into.
Yeah. I really like the art in that, in particular. I think that's that was the nice medium between, handheld, like, Zelda designs that I really liked. I don't know why I didn't get that, but it looked fantastic.
Yeah, for sure. Game Boy stuff, everyone did Pokemon. You know, everyone got the Link cables, everyone found every single little glitch, missing no, got the rare candies.
Oh yeah, totally.
Did you guys do the trading glitch where, it would clone Pokemon in a sense?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, that was a classic.
Timeless.
And that was cool, cause it was like, you would hear about all, because, like, of course you didn't have the internet culture at the time, but you'd hear about all this from your friends, and then when something new came up like that, like, I remember the time I first heard about Missing Go, and it was like, I must have replayed the game from the start just to get up to that point. Mm-hmm. And it was so cool, like, like you, this whole new element to a game you've already played for whatever 60, 70 hours with that one little thing. And it's incredible again.
So much good stuff.
Yeah, totally. And like Chad said, for Sega, you don't really care about the industry or anything. So there's all these really random, like, whatever games. And there's just so much of them. And they're fun because you don't really think to acknowledge what you would now in regards to context of the industry.
It's interesting how, you know, the industry has that kind of, that pull on you. You know, if you read a review, it kind of gives you a sense that, well, this game is this good in your head, whether if you just pick up a game and give it a shot, you might like it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, totally.
Sucks. Yeah, definitely. And on the same subject of the miss and go and everything, on the way you kind of get things through word of mouth, maybe this was just a local thing with me, but there was this rumor going around that if you hold down and B while you catch Pokemon, that is how you do it.
That is the only way. I've heard so many different.
I still do that. Still today, I do it.
I think everyone does.
I know it doesn't do anything, but I do it.
Down and B. Whatever makes you feel better. I mean, that's what everyone thought. It's like everyone's like. I remember when I was told for the first time, it's like someone watching me catch a Pokemon, and then they said, "You dumbass, what are you doing?" That's how I learned. Sure enough, still do it to this day.
You too. Yeah.
Who started that?
I don't know.
Some jackass.
Yeah.
Probably the same guy that started Rickroll.
I guess my first stuff with games was I did have the Genesis, but I mean I had my brother had the Nintendo before I was born, so I grew up with Mario and Duck Hunt, and I'll just say that I was a pretty sore loser back in the day. And you know, everyone hates that stupid little giggling dog when you miss the ducks, and I was not a fan of it at all when I was 3 years old. I was at my grandparents' house. And I was with my cousins and my brother, and it was my turn to shoot the ducks, and I missed, and I started screaming, and then I started banging on the TV with a gun, trying to hit that stupid-ass dog.
Holy shit.
Yeah. I turned out okay. I mean, you know, by now, that would probably make, you know, national news. Some kid is, this violent kid needs to be locked up for his gun violence, and God, but, yeah. Everyone hated that dog, and I was a sore loser, but yeah, my first console, you know, myself was that I wanted, that I told my parents, I want this one, was the Nintendo 64, and they gave the impression that, you know, you're starting to get a little bit old for games, which is, I was six, so I was kind of bummed. I was kind of bummed I didn't get it for Christmas, but my birthday's about a month after, and I got that, and I got Super Mario 64, and I got it the morning, like a school morning, and I tried telling my mom and dad, like, I don't have to go to school today, right? I said, no, you still got to go to school. And so I played it in the morning, and, you know, that's all I could think about during school, and I was telling my friends, I'm going to go home and play Mario 64. And it was just such a big deal, you know, going in 3D, and it was, you know, it started it. It started it for me, which is why I'm here talking about games now is probably, you know, the Nintendo 64.
Oh yeah, for sure. Same thing with me. Like you said, it was the first one I actually sought out to get myself. Like, I saw that and I had to have it. And it's the same thing with Super Mario Galaxy. Like, you play it and it's just like fun. You have nothing but good memories when you think back to Super Mario 64. And it was like that for the entirety of the console. Like, there's all these games where you're just having so much fun. They're innovative and like there was a ton of stuff on them, and yeah, like, man, I actually went out and rebought one actually fairly recently, and holy hell, those games are expensive now, but totally worth it.
Yeah, the 64 is actually where I first got involved in Zelda. Was Ocarina of Time. I saw a friend of mine playing, because I played the Zelda on Nintendo. I played it on Game Boy, but those were fun, but they didn't, you know, hold like elite status. But yeah. I saw someone playing. I saw him riding around with a Pona, and it's like, I gotta have that. And I got it, and, you know, it's Ocarina of Time. It's, you know, considered by many to be the best game ever. And I'll just say probably the biggest memory I have there is, going to Temple of Time, pulling out the Master Sword. Whoop, you're an adult. You go back out into the marketplace. Everything's kind of deserted and on fire. And you're trying to say, what the hell's happening? And I need to say, I went to try to go talk to one of the little things standing around.
Oh, and,
no. What I was like 7 or 8. I was definitely like eight years old. And, you know, you go try and talk to one, and you hear this scream, and then he starts humping the hell out of you. I threw the controller down, and I had to leave the room. I had literally, like, tens of nightmares of falling into holes in these redheads. Just, they still creep me the hell out.
Oh, yeah. It's between that and Sonic drowning, video games are messed up.
Maybe video games do have an adverse effect on our psyche, and we just haven't realized it till now.
Maybe. My God. But, I mean, have you guys been to TVTropes.com or TVTropes.org? They have what's known as nightmare fuel. I mean, they just define every single little thing that you would be considered. Like, it'll give every instance of nightmare fuel in video games a bunch of examples, and they'll give instances of Nintendo hard. And sure
really?
Enough. Yeah, I'll go ahead and post in our little chat, but listeners, go ahead and look it up, tvtropes.org, and just type in nightmare fuel, and it'll give you a bunch of, just examples, and almost every single example has a link to another article about a certain movie, or about what horrifying transformations or dream sequences and examples in itself. But yeah, you can waste a lot of time on tvtropes.org if you want, and that's TROPES. TVTropes.org, and yeah, give it a look. But God, read it. It's scary as hell.
Wikipedia of terror.
Well, oh, this site's actually a lot like Wikipedia in that you get on it, and then you just start clicking things, and then it's 3 hours later, and you don't know what happened.
Exactly. Guys, go ahead and click on that link in the chat now. Just look at the picture. It's a rabbit.
No. That's great. Fantastic.
Yeah, listeners, that's the main picture on the Nightmare Fuel page. It's pretty good. Give it a look. But yeah, I guess we're running really close to over the hour mark. So yeah, I'm sure we'll talk more about this kind of stuff, the 64, the PlayStation, all the stuff we had growing up around next time. But it's been about an hour, and it's flown by. I think first podcast, not too bad, not too shabby. But I guess we'll end it here. Dual Wielding Podcast. I'm your host, Anthony Gerhardt. And thanks, Chad. Thanks, Michael.
No problem.
And thank you. Depending on how it works next week, this is about 2 weeks in the making about us getting here. Hopefully we'll see you next week.
Absolutely.
And, yeah, chat with you guys next week. Catch you later.
Peace.